when the right people come together at the right moment, when they care almost as much about winning as they do about each other, they can become the best of the best.
Welcome to the Best Soccer Show, the best soccer show in the whole world.
Here we go! It's the Best Soccer Show. Jason Davis and sitting in for Jared Dubois, special guest Sam Stokes from Yank Report. We are live on a very different night, a Tuesday night. This is when it could work for everybody. You just got a life and everything else. I got a toddler, I got a teenager. I know you're a busy man as well, Sam. Thank you very much for coming by and doing this, Sam.
Absolutely, man. I'm trying to get as much volume as I can in my hair to try to match what we're losing from Jared. But yeah,
that's
I just got out of the gym. I just plugged in.
Well, that's something he does not do. So you got that on him. There's no gym action happening for Mr. Dubois. We got Sam here to sit in because Jared is, I don't know, is that public knowledge? Nick, can you give me a high sign if that is public knowledge? I don't know. Okay, he's saying he doesn't know. Jared is not available. I won't go into why. That's up to him to share with everybody. I think the besties know in our Slack. But otherwise, he just wasn't available this week. But we wanted to give you a show. Sam is brilliant over at Yank Report on his YouTube page. You can check him out. Also, Report Yank on Twitter. Is there a story as to why that's backwards, Sam? Have I asked you this before?
I'm guessing it's because of Yankees. Like, Yankees have kind of taken up a lot of the Yank area.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So you kind of gotta make do.
So the old America's old sport is squatting on America's new sport is what you're telling me, right? That's the deal.
And I get a lot of Yankees content in my news feed for whatever reason. Like, it pops up periodically. I could care less about the Yankees, but
so this is a live show, so we have phone lines are open. If you want to call in and ask me questions, ask Sam questions. I would take the opportunity to ask Sam things. I know he does a lot of stuff at his YouTube channel, but we got him for free, so I'm very excited about that. 717-727-2378 is the phone number. There you go. So it's right there on the screen if you're watching on YouTube, on Twitch, on Twitter. I think everybody's seeing that. Call us up. Talk about whatever's on your mind. And there are some things to get into. We're less than 100 days from the World Cup. I know we're all, Sam, we're just kind of in this mode. When we cover the national team, and obviously I do this on my radio show, Sam, did you know I have a radio show?
I've heard that.
Yeah, you hear? I have a radio show.
WNBC. WNBC.
When you get to the national team part, and you feel like you have to kind of talk about the national team, we are getting closer and closer to the World Cup. But there's not a ton to look. The European season is underway, so basically, it's like, how did that guy do, and how did that guy do, and did he get minutes and things like that. You told me that you just recorded a video for your YouTube channel on the Americans this weekend. What stands out for you? I mean, Josh Sargent scored today. That's great. I don't know if it changes anything.
I think the most important thing for us right now heading into September and then heading into November is going to be the form of Chris Richards. I think the center back depth is, you know, the two weaknesses on the squad are striker and center back. And there's not a lot we can do about striker at this point. I think we're going to get the hot hand, just whoever that may be, plus Jesus Ferreira. But that center back.
But Sam, I kind of feel like we're going to get a lukewarm hand. Like, you know, there doesn't seem to. I mean, maybe Jordan Pefok goes on a real tear in the Bundesliga, and it's just you cannot leave him out. And I think Jesus Ferreira has probably done enough, and the MLS season's got, what, 9 games left for him? He's going to get to 15 or 16 goals, and we'll say, okay, that's a great year for a young player. But we're not going to get a striker who's in blistering form, right? I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, that guy doesn't exist. There's not going to be some mystical Erling Haaland out there that's just going to drop down. You know, there's only a couple months left. You know, these guys, whoever your guy is, whether it's, well, DK's out, but if it's Sargent, if it's Hoppy, if it's Pefok, if it's Haji Wright, whoever the guy that you're backing is, I mean, they're not going to turn into Mbappe in the next couple of months. I mean, we pretty much got what we're going to get at the striker position. It's going to be the hot hand. The center back position, though, I think we have an opportunity for a big upgrade when it comes to Chris Richards, a player that's been out absent from the national team with an injury for a long period of time. I think him getting that opportunity against Liverpool in a big moment for Crystal Palace whenever, you know, they were holding on to that draw, and Vieira decides to go with the young player in that spot. I think that's a very good sign moving forward that he's going to be acclimated. He's going to be getting minutes. He's not just going to be riding the pine through September. So I think it's a very good sign for the national team moving forward.
Yeah, a little bit of time for him to build up a head of steam at Palace. I will say that was Crystal Palace holding on by their fingernails to a cliff, up a man. Now, you know, look, it's Liverpool. They still have weapons. So we saw what they did to execute the comeback. He did not play center back as he would in a U.S. men's national team setup. I know there's been talk of flirting with the three-man back line for Greg Berhalter. And one of the things I want to get into with you is sort of the tactical evolution of Berhalter. I watched a video that you did on that. It was excellent over the course of qualifying. But I don't think we have a real firm idea as to whether I could be a five-back system. And even if it was, Chris Richards is going to play as a center back, not as a wing back, which is where Vieira deployed him. Do you think that says anything about how Vieira views him, or was that circumstantial?
I think it's circumstantial. I really do. And I think that there's appearances for your club team, and then there's appearances for your club team. You know, like, do you weigh an appearance for Bayern Munich whenever they're 6-1 up in a League Cup game, you know, against a tier three team or whatever? Like, that's different than you have a draw that you're trying to preserve in the late minutes against Liverpool, one of the best attacking teams in the world, and you're holding on for dear life. I mean, in that situation, to trust the young Chris Richards, I mean, he's obviously done something to earn that kind of trust in that kind of moment.
Yeah, just being there for a couple of weeks at this point, I do think that, you know, even though I'm saying Chris Richard deployed as a wingback at the end of that game, Crystal Palace holding on for dear life means he was defending. He was doing nothing but defending. I mean, you didn't see him in Liverpool's half, I don't think, at all. And he was winning balls in the air, which is what, you know, Chris Richards is capable of doing, going up and winning balls. I think there were a couple of moments when maybe those clearances could be a little bit firmer, Sam, but I don't have any issue with him getting that debut and that experience. So you're saying that Chris Richards has something to build on, and you believe that there's an opening. Is that an opening that exists because nobody else is making a firm claim, or because, you know, Chris Richards is potentially that good?
It's a lot of things. I mean, I think in a lot of these situations where we have we have problems at depth at a position, it's because players who were supposed to be in those positions to step up for us are either out injured or they didn't quite live up to what we were expecting them to be. I think that's definitely true at the striker position. Whenever you could say, you know, Jozy Altidore is definitely of age to be playing in the World Cup, but he's not there because he's kind of fallen off a cliff form-wise, and that has led us to the spot we are right now. You could kind of say the same thing with Josh Sargent, who was supposed to be the guy. I mean, he had all the makings of the guy at the youth position. He got, you know, he went to Germany at 18 years old. I mean, he did everything right that you're supposed to do to build to this position where we are right now, and it just hasn't happened.
But he didn't, Sam. And by the way, I will note, somebody said, Kai718, pointing out that Chris Richards did have, I think it was a flick-on header that probably should have been
finished on the corner kick.
That's nice. Somewhere else. There it is. Yeah, that was the moment for Crystal Palace in the attacking end when they did create that opportunity and send everybody forward. But the thing about Sargent, and this is true about Ricardo Pepi, whose name we haven't brought into this conversation yet, and who I think people have just mentally given up on. You know, he's young enough that he's going to have another World Cup cycle. He could still very well be a U.S. international down the line. We saw enough flashes of that to think that he has a future. But in this cycle, he's basically played himself out of contention because he made the wrong choice. Now, I don't know if there was another $20 million offer on the table for Ricardo Pepi if Augsburg was the only place. I do think it's a little bit weird that there's American investment at Augsburg, that he was their record signing when they're in the middle of a relegation fight. He's got zero experience at that level. Why are you putting all your eggs in that particular basket? But Josh Sargent, a little bit older player, and yes, with that German experience, also chose a very difficult situation by going to a Norwich team everybody knew was going to have trouble staying up and wasn't going to create that many opportunities for him to score, Sam. And then you're also going behind an established striker, and maybe you think that he'll move on or whatever, and maybe you think you can win minutes. But then he ends up playing on the wing. He's not nearly as effective as he would want to be in that position. And, you know, I wonder about those decisions and how much they set those strikers back.
Well, I'll say this. They got their opportunities. I think Sargent got a tremendous amount of opportunities for his club. His struggles to score goals weren't relative to him not getting starts. I mean, he got a ton of starts for Bremen. He just wasn't able to be very effective with it. And even, you know, in the glimpses of life that he did show, got him that transfer over to Norwich. So yeah. He got his opportunities. I think Pepe got opportunities right away as well. It's just anytime you go anywhere in Europe, you're not going to get endless opportunities. You know, and then you look at some of the players who have succeeded by going over to Europe. You look at Christian Pulisic and Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Gio Reyna. These guys were in difficult positions as well. Maybe even more. Mm-hmm. These guys were all at better clubs relative to Bremen and Augsburg, and they were able to seize their opportunities. I'm not really blaming these guys, especially not Pepe, because like you said, Pepe's got so much room ahead of him, and Sargent does as well. I believe Sargent's only 21 years old. Like, he's got a lot of soccer in front of him.
All of these guys are so young, and we were counting on them so much. And
what
that's
we're
the
talking
thing.
About is relative to November. That's
right. Right. The gap between generations. I mean, you mentioned Josie is still, I mean, considering the number of 30 plus players who are still featuring for very good national team, I mean, it's possible Uruguay is going to run out Cavani and Suarez. Those guys are 35. Each one of them is 35 years old, and they're still going to probably be dangerous in the World Cup. We don't have a 32-year-old striker who's still in form enough to be the guy at that position. So we're looking to 21-year-olds, and we're looking to 19-year-olds. And that sucks, but it's not actually their fault that we're in this position. It's just we don't have anywhere else to focus our energy, I think, is the problem. Unless you want to talk about Brendan Vasquez, 23? And he's and he, again, everybody wants to say, well, Brendan Vasquez plays in Major League Soccer, which, and he, you know, he hasn't been in the team at all, so is it even possible that he rushes his way into this group?
Yeah, you're going to a bigger point, which is, I mean, if you're Greg Berhalter and you're taking over the U.S. men's national team in, 2018, 2019? I can't remember.
Yeah, what was the last year, and when did he actually start?
But if you're taking over the team, you're looking at what you have in front of you, and you're saying, okay, I got a few veterans that I can build around. I got John Brooks. I got Michael Bradley. I got Josie Altidore. Maybe I can find a way to get Darlington Nagbe back in this squad, and those are four players that you can build around. And then slowly but surely, all four of those guys have one way or another found themselves out of the squad. That kind of illuminates sort of the difficult position that we're in right now, kind of taking it all the way back to what you originally asked me about Chris Richards in the center back situation. I mean, if you look at how Chris Richards ultimately got to this position where he's being targeted as the starting center back for the national team, I mean, you have John Brooks kind of come and go. You have Matt Miazga kind of come and go. You have Tim Ream given an opportunity. He came and went. Mark McKenzie came and went. CCV has been he didn't get nearly as much of a run out as some of those guys that I mentioned earlier, but you start seeing Miles Robinson seems like the guy, gets an injury, so he's out, and then you're ultimately left with Walker Zimmerman, who I think's been fantastic for the national team over World Cup qualifying and into the summer, and then Aaron Long maybe.
Yeah,
Chris Richards, maybe. CCV, maybe, you know, that's pretty much where we're at right now. And it's just been not so much players playing themselves into that role so much as players either getting injured or playing themselves out of that role.
Well, I know that there's some consternation. I'll be curious to know what your audience thinks about Walker. Aaron Long, I mean, people seem pretty down on him. And that's, look, his club form might matter a lot more than Walker's because he was injured for a long time. He's coming back from that injury. He seems to have lost a step. And, you know, there is a gap between our memories of good Aaron Long and now. Walker Zimmerman was excellent when he established himself. And I think it's worth pointing out every single time. The guy was like a late addition because I think of COVID protocols or something to one of the national team qualifying rosters and established himself. And now he's the guy that we think we can trust, except his club form hasn't been up to his own standard. It's not been bad. But Nashville's taking a step back, Walker's taking a step back, and people are thinking, oh God, we don't have any center backs. Do you think of it that way, or is it just, you know, look, we're all panicking because there's less than 100 days, we don't have any other information to go on?
I think Walker Zimmerman's going to be the guy. I don't care what happens between now and November. I mean, considering who we have behind him, like Walker Zimmerman's definitely going to play, not just because of his play on the field, but I think of some of the things that he's doing off the field and some of the intangibles that he's going to bring. Those other spots, Aaron Long, I mean, like I just kind of went over, Aaron Long is in this position because he's the only guy left. So like this, there's not a lot of other places we can go with it. So he's kind of being forced into this
and
position.
the guys that might even have a chance are fairly new to this group, haven't been in this position before. I think have some issues with their. I mean, I think Cameron Carter-Vickers has turned into a much better player than he was 2 or 3 years ago. But the question is, can you integrate him that quickly to be that guy in this system from what he's done at Rangers in the little time that Berhalter has seen him? And then there's like Eric Palmer Brown or Mark McKenzie, and I don't think anybody feels comfortable with those guys at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, Eric Palmer Brown did have some opportunities in the summer, and I'm saying Eric Palmer Brown and CCV. I mean, I was mm-hmm. really hoping that one of those guys would step up, and between EPB, CCV, and Aaron Long, we would see somebody who was just on a different level than everybody else, on a different plane. I think we did see that from Walker Zimmerman. I think he showed head and shoulders above any of those guys. But I think between the three of them, I think EPB was maybe a step behind, but CCV and Aaron Long, I mean, it was hard to split them. They both made some mistakes. Neither of them I was super sure of. I'd be a little bit nervous if I see either of them in the game. So it's not as if these guys didn't really get opportunities. CCV, of course, didn't have as much of a run out as some of these other guys. But, it's just basically where we're at this point.
Do you have any... Do you have any thoughts about whether or not Tim Ream could be in this picture? I mean, he was there at the beginning of qualifying. Seems as though Berhalter moved quickly away from him, but he continues to impress, even with Fulham back in the Premier League, especially on that opening day match against Liverpool. People were singing his praises. You know, there's a difference between the way that they're going to play at Fulham versus the way the United States is going to play, and that may be the disconnect for a guy like Tim Ream.
No, I don't see it. I think every time Greg Berhalter's been asked about the center back position, he's been very specific about what he expects out of that center back. He needs somebody that can come up and win one-on-one duels and can cover space. And neither of those things are things that Tim Ream shines in. Neither
is there another guy that maybe comes to mind is maybe not quite that fit, according to Berhalter, that gets constantly mentioned?
There's three. I mean, there's Tim Ream, there's Matt Miazga, and there's John Brooks, of course.
Right.
I mean, those three guys kind of are similar in that they're not super mobile players and that they tend to play with the ball of their feet a little bit more. I mean, you compare that to who I think the archetype is, which is like Miles Robinson, a player who can definitely cover space. So in my mind, if you don't fit into the press game for Berhalter, and that means for a center back being able to come up and win one-on-one battles to keep the pressure up, and if the ball goes over your head, be able to run back and cover that space. If you cannot do those two things, then you're just not a player that's going to be a part of this offense.
Man, and again, I know there's a drop-off, and maybe you don't think of these injuries as necessarily debilitating anymore, but just to bring in another MLS example, Joseph Martinez is not the player he used to be, and we're seeing that with Atlanta, and it looks like Aaron Long is a victim of the same thing. That his injury has robbed him of that ability, because that was his calling card. Aaron Long is an excellent athlete, or was an excellent athlete, and that recovery speed kept him able to maybe be at a higher level than just his positioning and understanding of the game would dictate. Now, so that's Chris Richards. We talked a little bit about him. There are other guys in Europe that we're keeping an eye on, and you know, in the Premier League now, a couple of them at Leeds. So let's spend some time on Tyler Adams and Brendan Aaronson. And I'll do this. I'm not going to drop a ton of sound drops on Sam's head. This is his guest spot on the show. But our own Jared Dubois requested a drop for Brendan Aaronson. I'm very much A-team, but that makes me old school, I guess. So he wanted this.
A-Aaron, where are you? Where is A-Aaron right now?
So that's for Brendan Aaronson. who is making a mark at Leeds United. You know, this one wasn't as impressive as the opening game against Wolves with the draw against Southampton. They gave up a 2-goal lead. You know, calling card for Leeds last season under Bielsa in particular, Sam, was their inability to keep the other team from scoring a bunch of goals. What did you think of this one, the first away match for this pair in the Premier League?
I think the struggle for Leeds and any team that plays like Leeds is always going to be keeping up that intensity over 90 minutes. And I think that was basically the story of this game. It looked like at about the 50th to 60th minute, Leeds kind of ran out of gas. And whenever you play the way they do and you run out of gas, if you're a half step short, you're going to get exposed. And it looked like just a total switch was flipped in that game, where Leeds went from being on the front foot to being on the back foot. I also felt like in the second half of that game, it looked like Leeds, instead of like going in the transition game, was going up against kind of a lower block. It looked like the opposition was kind of letting them have the ball a little bit more. And that's always been, I think, the question mark for Brendan Aaronson as a player. We know what he can do whenever the opposition has the ball. We know what he can do whenever he wins the ball in transition and is running into space. What does he do whenever the opposition is sitting back and waiting for him to come to him? Can he find those passes? Can he beat players that are sat back? I think that's the question mark for Brendan Aaronson. And I think that was the reason why we saw two different Brendan Aaronsons in that game, where you saw the super effective Brendan Aaronson, who looked like Leeds' best player last game, and then a Brendan Aaronson in this game, where he was good in the first half, and then in the second half kind of fell off a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any real concerns. I mean, we know what his game is, and it does translate to the national team. I mean, I think it's more of a confidence level thing. And I'm not, you know, unless you are throwing in with your lot in with Leeds as a U.S. men's national team fan, which I'm not judging you for. I mean, go for it if you don't have a Premier League team. I'm not sure it's necessary to live and die with those performances, other than, you know, as an American soccer fan, Sam, I want Jesse Marsh to succeed, because that's really the last frontier for us, right, is high-level coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all have our have a lot of pain built up and are hoping that Jesse Marsh can be that guy, because for some, I mean, this is true for me as much as it is for all the other fans out there. We have decided that if Jesse Marsh can be successful, that somehow means like Americans are successful at soccer. Like, we've put so much into him at this point.
Yeah.
Even though I'm pretty much in the camp that, like, we're never going to win the respect of the British, because the British don't respect anybody outside of the British.
Oh, I don't care about them. Hold on. They say Cameron Ka'avea, so we don't even talk about them on this show. The Brits. Ah, come on.
I mean, they call
unless they are Cameron Carter-Vickers or Jedi Robinson, then we have all the time in the world, because they're both. They're both. It's okay.
Yeah, they call the Bundesliga a Farmers League. You know, they dismiss the French league pretty much outright. I mean, Google the Bundesliga tax and see what that's all about. To kind of see how the British view other soccer and other leagues around the world.
We definitely do like Nicholas Murray too. Shout out to Nicholas Murray, who's in the chat. But go ahead, Sam. Sorry.
I think one thing that I run into a lot when we're talking about soccer with a lot of fans and people who are into the game is forgetting that systems are so important and players have to fit in specific systems in order to be successful. I think there's like this idea that like you can just throw any player out there into any situation and they'll be good, especially at the lower levels. You might find that with players at the top end of the game.
Oh, but the cream of the crop. You can throw Lewandowski into any team. He's going to score goals. Probably. He didn't for Barcelona this weekend, but probably he will. But
there was talk about Haaland. How is Man City going to adjust with Haaland coming in?
Right.
You know, you see players like Hazard going to Real Madrid and it not quite working out the same way that it did at Chelsea. I mean, it happens with the top players, but I think specifically with the bottom tier, teams tend to play a specific way, and you have to find those specific players to play that specific way. And we don't really think about that whenever we transfer it over to the national team.
Oh, like, no, we do not. We're the
worst
at that.
If Brendan Aaronson plays well in his first game for Leeds, like that obviously means that he'll be able to play the same. Like,
oh, he's a starter now, Sam. Yeah. Did you know? He has to start now. I'm not saying he shouldn't start. I'm just saying it's kind of crazy to jump to that conclusion based on one good performance with Leeds that you have to push out. And look, I know we don't know if Gio's going to be healthy, and clearly Christian's form and minutes is an issue, and we'll come to Christian in a second. But yeah, come on. It's not like he just, you know, you drop him into the national team and exactly it transfers over.
Yeah, I see that all over the place, man. You see that, like, John Brooks is a big one, where John Brooks plays in a very specific defensive setup that or at least he did last season, that accounts for his inability to cover distance. The U.S. doesn't play like that. You know, like Jordan Pefok is a guy that is very successful at winning headers in the box. If you give him a lot of service, if you're that type of team that does not expect to be creating a ton of quality chances, so you're just lumping the ball forward, and then whenever you get in the offensive third, you're lumping crosses into the box, then a guy like Jordan Pefok can steal you some goals. But if you're playing a lot of balls to his feet and you're expecting to do a lot of intricate passing movements and create in the final third against the low block, Jordan Pefok is not quite your guy. So these are the these are the situations and issues that you kind of got to figure out. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying that you need to consider these things whenever thinking about these players.
All right, so let's move on to us. I will get to Christian Pulisic, and I don't know how much Americans abroad we do need to do this again. It's the countdown to the World Cup, and it's certainly Sam's expertise. But I don't want to get too granular. But I do think there are some guys that deserve extra attention. First of all, let's just maybe a positive here. Weston McKennie apparently has a bionic shoulder or has Wolverine blood. I don't know what's happening there. But all of this 3-4 weeks out with this shoulder injury, starting lineup for Juventus. Now, I thought they looked pretty trash for most of that game, Sam. I mean, they kind of won it just by being Juventus over Sassuolo. But I think Weston looked okay. It's a different situation for him at Juve than it would be for the national team.
Yeah, man, Weston, I felt like, looked really good, especially whenever they switched up the formation and went to more of a 4-3-3, and he was, more in a more comfortable position for Weston McKennie. This is not the first time we've seen Weston McKennie come back from an injury way faster than anybody expected. That's kind of been his calling card at this point. Yeah, I don't know what he's made out of, but
he's from Texas.
Stuff.
That's what that is. He's from Texas and a military brat, made of steel.
Him and Dempsey,
stuff.
Yeah, I think the big thing for Juventus is I thought Di Maria's impact was tremendous for that squad, and the striker whose name I forget. I mean,
Vlahovic.
Like you look at Dybala and Morata, who were the strikers for that club for the past few seasons, and they were just, hit or miss. It seems like Dybala is one of those players that only scores golazos. You know, like he doesn't put away the normal goals. And to have a striker that's just going to go out there and just win games for you and steal points for you like that. I mean, you pair that with what Juventus already have. That it's looking like they reloaded over there.
And we'll see if they can step up their game. It's going to be good to see West. I mean, look, it's a world famous club, and there was a couple years ago, we wouldn't even have imagined a player being in a club like Juventus, an American player, a U.S. international. Now we also have a U.S. international at Barcelona, kind of. That looks like didn't dress. They're trying to sell the kid, right? This is about Sergiño being done at Barca. I know he wants to stay. I'm sure it's that, Dutch Barca connection and just the famous, Barcelona colors being Blaugrana and everything. I know Manchester United's mentioned, Sam. What's the best case scenario for Dest right now?
Boy, I don't know at this point. It seems like Manchester United is the club that he's being linked to most heavily, but that doesn't seem like a fun situation to jump into. I mean, you go from probably the most sketchy situation in world football right now to the second most sketchy situation in world football. And that's the only time I'm going to use the word football. I kind of slipped up there.
When
we're talking about European teams, it kind of like goes in and out. Anyway,
I do it on the radio show. You might not catch me doing it here, but I do it on the radio show. So I'm going to give you a pass.
Yeah,
I'm going to give you a pass.
He's such a good player, man. He seems like he could be so beneficial for so many teams. I have a feeling he would be playing for Barcelona if it wasn't for all this other stuff going on. He seems just like a piece that they could move for a club that desperately needs to get out of a lot of salaries right now. So I feel like just get somewhere where they need you, Serge. I mean, he was starting to turn a corner last year before he got hurt defensively. He seemed like he was becoming a different player. And the trouble with Serge is he's so good. Like he's such an elite level player that you just can't send him anywhere. I mean, he's a top player. So I hope he finds a spot soon.
Yep. All right, let's go to the phone lines. I've been making Felix wait because it's been so good with Sam. Felix in Chicago, you're on the Best Soccer Show. What's up?
Hey, what's going on? Hey, what's happening, Sam? Love seeing you on the show. I wanted to just kind of talk to you. Oh, first off, Sam, me encanta la camiseta. I know you're practicing. You know exactly what I said. I love that shirt. I can't wait until you put it on the store. As a Latino who supports the the U.S. national team, that's exactly the kind of gear I've been looking for. Like, it speaks
we can switch over todo español from now on if you want, Felix. We can drop. No, I'm just kidding. We're not doing that. I'm not there yet.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah, no, we'll probably eat
this Saturday. This Saturday it's going on sale. Sábado.
Perfect.
Okay,
sounds
perfect.
Great. It's a nice shirt.
Perfect.
Definitely
awesome.
Nice shirt.
Yeah, no, it's a great shirt. No, so what I wanted to talk about is first off, like you guys, when I first jumped on the show, the center back situation, I think like everybody, I don't love the situation. I think we guys are kind of talking about the form of Zimmerman and Long. I think it's two different situations. I think the issue with Long is Aaron Long has been used to playing a certain way his entire career, where he really leveraged his athletic edge that he had. And now he's come back. He's a little bit older. He's come back from a major injury. And I think he's not, I just don't think he's been able to be as effective with his limited athletic capacity now after that injury. And I think that's what we're seeing with Aaron Long, which is a little more concerning because we are kind of leaning on him so heavily, or Greg is, right? Walker Zimmerman, I don't think Walker Zimmerman's the same situation. I think Walker Zimmerman is just, he went so quickly to these heady heights, and he got this big contract, and now he's a guaranteed starter going into a World Cup where he wasn't even, you remember, he didn't even make the only reason he was even on the roster is because Tim Ream pulled out with personal issues. From World Cup qualifying. And now the guy is going to be a starter and maybe even a captain. I mean, so the heady things that he's kind of coming into, I think with Walker Zimmerman, I think it's just a matter of he's probably looking ahead to the World Cup. And he's kind of like MLS now is just kind of like noise until he gets there. So I think it's two different situations in terms of their form. So I'm not as worried about Walker, even though I prefer he'd be playing well, right? Whoever the partner is going to be, whether it's Long, whether CCV wins a spot, which I'm dubious of. My personal one I was hoping for is Amrick Palmer-Brown, but he did not show well in those friendlies in June. I mean, I don't really know who else. I know there's rumors about Mark McKenzie getting a transfer or something alone. I don't see him doing anything. One question I did want to ask: we're seeing that John Brooks is not getting a spot, like anywhere. Do you think that validates?
He's on his way to Saudi Arabia, apparently, Felix.
Yes.
That's the report out right
yes.
now.
Right. Which I'm sure is a nice check, and it's going to be an interesting, experience for him, culturally. But in terms of him being on the national team and his quality as a player right now, in this moment in time, do you think that validates kind of him being left off, the fact that there's not no one in a top league was willing to pick him up?
Do you want to take that, Sam? I'm kind of loath to judge a guy like that, without having a full picture. I don't know what he looks like physically right now. I don't know how well he is sort of, where his fitness levels are or how sharp he is. I don't know. I mean, I definitely think it seems odd that there's nobody in Germany down the table who would be willing to give him a contract unless he just doesn't care about that. He cares about the money, which he's 29 now, so he still probably has a couple good more years as a center back. The center backs age a little bit slower than a lot of the players on the field, depending on how you play, right? We've already talked about John Brooks and the kind of game he plays. If he sort of see, I can see it two ways. One, nobody wanted him, and this validates Greg Berhalter on some level, although I don't think Berhalter would even say it that way. Or two, Brooks sees that there's no way back to the national team, and isn't necessarily worried about the level he's going to play at, and is going to go get a check because he's already had Champions League football, and he's already been at the top level in the Bundesliga, and he doesn't need that anymore. I don't know, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning considering he's had so much time to find a team. Like, he knew he was going to be a free agent for a long time, even prior to the window starting. So I'm sure that his agent, whoever his representation, or had feelers out there for a long time. I think the thing about John Brooks is it goes back to the system thing. I think you have to play him in a very specific way in order for him to be successful. He's not a guy that can just jump into any squad. You're not going to be able to play him in a four-man back line. You're not going to be able to play him in a high-press system. And so many teams around around the world are playing that right now. So it kind of limits his places where he can potentially land. The speculation is that he's asking for too much money. I don't know that. You got to assume that that's the case. I don't know.
Which, by the way, is his prerogative. It's his right to do that. Now, if he can't get it anywhere and he's out of a job, well, then he made a mistake. And he's going to have to take less. This is why the MLS links never made any sense. Even if San Jose brings him in as a DP, which, again, was very spurious to even start with, what are they going to pay him? And is it the kind of contract a team like San Jose would give, or any MLS team for that matter? And I don't think that coming to MLS would necessarily get him right back in the running with the national team. Obviously, there are national team fullback or center backs in MLS. But you know, maybe the juice wasn't worth the squeeze for him on that level either.
My question is, though... What is too much money? Like, we don't really know what he's asking
for. Yeah, exactly.
Like, we know he was on a big contract for Wolfsburg. He was on Cadillac money. Is he asking for Cadillac money right now?
By the way, that is relative to Wolfsburg and relative to the Bundesliga. And you know this as well as I do. Somebody was making a comparison. I guess everybody outside of Barca and Real Madrid in La Liga, and this is not the Bundesliga, but it's, you know, there's similarities here. I think the net spend for the transfer window was like 4 million euros or something. The net spend, right? So they've sold a bunch and they bought a little bit and it nets out to 4 million. Middlesbrough. Somebody spent 120 million pounds, right, in the championship or whatever. And it just shows you the money is so different outside of England. And so when we talk about what John Brooks was making in Germany, yeah, good Cadillac money for Germany, but nothing compared to what the Premier League players are making. So I just want to put that in context, because there's this notion that guys ask for too much money. He has a limited window to make the money he can make as an athlete. I'm not going to judge anybody for that. And if he decides his national team career is worth the sacrifice, if he had any hope of it left, more power to him. More power to him. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to steamroll you, Sam.
No, I thought Felix was still on the line. I was kind of waiting for him. Yeah, one of those situations where you're just purely speculating. You don't know all the details. You don't know how much money he's actually asking for relative to what his perceived value is right now. So we're all just speculating. We're assuming that he's asking for like Cadillac money, or at least Cadillac Bundesliga money, or maybe a little bit less than that. But maybe that's not where the market is for him right now. I have no idea. So all I can tell you is that he's not a player that can just fit in anywhere. His options are already a little bit limited. However, with the amount of time that he's had to find clubs, it feels like he should have by now gotten a sense of the market, got a sense of his perceived value, and been able to find a club. And the fact that he hasn't been able to do that at this point, I think it is worrying.
Yeah, I probably misspoke on that factoid, by the way, because Jackie's pointing out Middlesbrough has sold more than they've spent so far. It's probably not Middlesbrough. I can't remember who it is, but it's definitely not, you know, one of the usual suspects in England that you think of spending a ton of money, right? It's just, again, you think of five or six clubs in England as the premier teams that would spend. But there are other teams in England who have spending power that trumps everybody in Germany outside of Bayern Munich, everybody in Spain outside of Barcelona, Real Madrid, and maybe Atleti. And even Atleti is mostly trying to net out zero. So just pointing that out. Go ahead, Felix. One more shout from you.
Yeah, no, the only thing I was asking, again, this is just one more question for you guys, and this is kind of getting into a topic that you cover, that you're kind of getting into, is like, you know, like someone like PFOC, right? A player, where would you, so let's just pretend that you guys are the coach. Where would you lean?
Oh, God.
Would you lean towards a player like a Jordan PFOC, or I can't think of anybody else. I do want to say Haji Wright, maybe, even though I don't know if Haji is a system thing or he's just isn't effective at that level. Or would you lean more towards Jesus Ferreira, Ricardo Pepi, players who probably fit your system more, but for whatever reason, they don't, they're just not generating the chances. So not what you think Greg would do. If you were Greg, where would you lean? Would you lean towards adjusting your system to a PFOC, or would you lean towards playing the guys who kind of fit your system?
Sam?
I mean, I'm a Ferreira guy. I have no problem admitting that. I've been a Ferreira fan for a while, and I think that he's been quite effective with the national team. I think that he was through with him on the field, they were able to generate some really quality chances against Uruguay and Morocco, which are two World Cup opponents. And I think that that's really all you can ask for a striker, especially in the short term, in a short term tournament like the World Cup. Can we generate chances with you on the field? I know if he continues to generate chances, those are going to fall for him. So I think Ferreira is the starter right now, and he's a lot more embedded than a lot of the fans think right now. I don't think it's a question for Berhalter. I think the question is just who's going to be the backups.
Yeah, I think you're right. Look, I don't think there is a perfect answer to this question. I think if I was the coach, I would go with Ferreira as well. I think that you have a setup that he is going to help bring out better out of those other guys on the field, Pulisic and Weah and Reyna, if he's out there, maybe Aronson, than a guy with limited abilities to sort of play with the ball. We've already talked about Jordan Pefok. I don't have a problem with bringing Pefok as a late game substitute when you need just to, let's just lump the ball up because nothing else is working and you need a physical body out there. I got no problem with that. And, you know, you could argue maybe Brandon Vasquez is really just that for people. He's not good enough in the other areas of the game. We don't have somebody who can check all the boxes. So you're going with the best of a mediocre bunch. And that Ferreira is definitely mediocre. It's just that we haven't seen enough and consistent quality from him to say, oh, he's absolutely 100% the guy. Just, we're not 100% sold on him, but he is the best of the bunch. That's what I would say, Felix.
Okay. No, I probably would tend to lean that way too. I think it's more important to get guys to fit into a 1 through 11, everyone playing the same way and their styles genuinely complement each other, as opposed to treating it like it's a video game and you're just throwing bodies out there and just assuming it's just going to work. I think when you see teams that don't work, that's what their coach is doing. He's just throwing square pegs and round holes and just thinking it's all going to happen. I wonder how it's going to happen. I don't know if Brendan Vasquez is going to get a shot in the next half. I'd imagine Greg's going to have a couple of slots open for late bloomers, and just to give him a late shout. I can't imagine he's going to go straight, this is my 26.
Well,
he's going to probably have a couple of spots open for
not in the positions that he has some depth issues, Sam. I mean, that's what that is, right? If we are fairly convinced that Ferreira is the number one, it doesn't mean he's going to start every game at the World Cup. By the way, thanks for the call, Felix. I'm going to move on, but
later, Felix.
If we believe that Ferreira is the number one, there's still at least two striker spots probably behind him in a 26-man roster. So, yeah, there's a chance that Brandon Vasquez could get in. I hope he gets a look in September. I definitely question, you know, how much you learn in a European camp with two games in, two months before the World Cup starts. I don't know how much you can actually get out of that. But as has been pointed out before, on the eve of the World Cup in 2010, Bob Bradley decided to call in Hercules Gomez, who nobody really saw in that group. I mean, and he had a good tournament. He did things for the United States that they needed. So it's possible. I don't think we're closing the door on anything. It's really hard to sort of analyze the situation when so much is up in the air.
Yeah, I think it's similar to some of the other positions that we're talking about, where it's not necessarily players earning their spots on the team, but other players not playing well enough to maintain. I think I really like Pefok in that role that you described, where you're down a goal and you need to throw the ball into the box. I think you can't ask for a better player than that if you're Greg Berhalter for the U.S. Men's National Team. I think he's got to be on that plane for that particular role. But I think for that other guy, I think it's going to be relative to, you know, Josh Sargent scored a goal today. Is he going to be able to maintain that momentum? If he maintains that momentum.
He's got the skill set, doesn't he? Like, he's got the skill set to make it work if he puts it all together.
We talked about Josh Sargent the same way that we talk about Ferreira right now, in that, you know, he's wonderful defender. He's got wonderful effort. He makes the team better around him. He can bring everybody else into the game. I think the difference between Sargent and Ferreira is Ferreira just scored a bunch of goals, and Sargent really hasn't done that. If Sargent can come alive, if he can find that form that he's been chasing for so long, maybe he can keep Brandon Vasquez out of the side. Maybe Matthew Hoppe gets to Middlesbrough, and all of a sudden, you know, his blonde hair catches on fire, and he goes Ooh. Super Saiyan, and you know. Ooh. Well, I think it's wide open. I don't think you're right. You know,
You're right. I'm just my reaction is about what I think is likely.
I don't think that's likely. But.
Yeah, I don't think that's likely, right? And I don't think it's likely somebody's talking about Josie's banging in 10 goals in Liga Mekis. I don't think that's likely.
No.
He's got one. You know, it's a very Josie goal. It really was. I hope he scores a bunch more goals, but I don't even know if he does, if Berhalter's going to sort of turn back the clock on Josie at this point. I mean, he's part of a different generation. Yeah, I know Yedlin's a holdover and Nicosta's a holdover, but I think that's a different thing. It's not Josie's fault we didn't qualify in 18, but I think that kind of does stick to him. And there's that. Anyway, there's a lot there. We don't really have time to go into the goalkeeper situation, which is certainly troubling, I think, on a couple of different levels. We've already talked Dest. Robinson is doing well at Fulham. I got no issues there. It's kind of moving up the field. Yunus Musa playing central midfield in a 4-3-3 under Gennaro Gattuso is a good sign. Hope he continues to build momentum there. Let's talk Christian Pulisic before we get to a couple other less serious topics. You know, it never stops, Sam. It's always something with Christian at Chelsea. Now it's reports that Thomas Tuchel doesn't trust him. Thomas Tuchel didn't say, I don't trust Christian Pulisic, but a writer in the Times or whatever says Thomas Tuchel doesn't trust Christian Pulisic. And now the Newcastle interest is picking up some steam. There are enough attacking weapons at Chelsea already, and even with the ones that they've sold, that you wonder if maybe Christian Pulisic should take that opportunity. There's no Champions League football. It's a step down in the world. It's an aspirational club. What would you think?
My thoughts on the situation is that being the third guy is still a trusted guy. Like, that's still a big part of the team. We're two games into the season, and it's two games into a season that Chelsea still struggled to score a bunch of goals. So it's not like the players ahead of him are exactly setting the world on fire. Now, the two players ahead of him, Mason Mount and Sterling, are some pretty big names. They're both English guys. They're both guys that are going to be playing in the World Cup for England come November. So those are that makes it a pretty steep mountain to climb for Pulisic. But I think as the weeks go on, he's definitely going to get his opportunities. I think anytime Christian Pulisic doesn't start a game, and this is going back to whenever he was at Dortmund, I mean, we lose our minds, you know. I don't know. I'm always a little bit wary about what's behind door number two. If he does make an exit to another top elite club, like on the caliber of Chelsea, and he would have to likely in order to get paid the amount of money that he wants to be paid. I don't see any situation where he's stepping down to a lower tier club, unless it's like Newcastle, who can pay him a bunch of money. But even then, you're out of the Champions League. It's hard to believe that a player as ambitious as Christian Pulisic is going to go that route.
Once you get to that level, now there are guys that have, you know, gone to big clubs, it hasn't worked out, and they moved on to lower tiers, and then maybe found their way back to a Champions League winning caliber team, which Chelsea is probably not right now, but they have been recently, and Christian was part of that. But generally speaking, once you get to the top of the mountain, you don't choose to climb halfway back down. So I do see that.
Yeah, and no matter where he goes, he's going to be facing quality opposition. It might not be Mason Mount and Sterling in England a few months ahead of a World Cup, and they just bought Sterling, and you know, and of course Chelsea's offensive woes and their inability.
Yeah,
to...
Yeah, well, that is one thing,
that
by
is,
the way.
Yeah,
and
Nicholas
Murray did say this. Now, this is more about what happened between Tuchel and Antonio Conte with the whole handshake kerfuffle, which I think we're going to talk about here in a minute. More directly, but Thomas Tuchel is a guy who clearly doesn't prioritize the attacking side of the ball. So if you are a Christian Pulisic type player and you need the ball and you need to be isolated, you need to get that's why you are there. And you've already gone through what, two or three managers at this point. You know, I understand cutting bait and choose. I've argued for that. I said, look, playing time's not coming. It's a World Cup. Go somewhere else. If he goes on loan to Newcastle, Sam, I suppose he could always come back. Again, if Tuchel leaves, maybe the fog clears at Chelsea and he gets another chance next season.
Maybe, but I also don't see Chelsea wanting to loan out their third attacker, you know, right before the season. This is a club that's expected to compete in a bunch of different tournaments. They're going to need a deep squad. I think he is a part of the plans. He has been that guy off the bench, so I don't see them letting go of him very easily.
You're not buying all the drama. You believe that it's okay. It's not great, but it's okay. That's what you're telling me.
I believe that Pulisic's frustrated. I believe that Tuchel has other players ahead of him, but I don't think that he is so far down in the pecking order that he's expendable for Chelsea. I don't believe that.
He'll sell more books if he's at Chelsea than he's at Newcastle, and he does have a book coming out. Did you see that? Christian Pulisic, My Journey So Far. I mean, it's a good journey. He's got a lot more journey left.
It's pretty incredible to write a biography at, 23, 24 years old. I mean, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to read it. But
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's a lot of pictures. I think there's a lot of pictures in there, but that's okay. You know, that's okay. It's an easy read. Since we brought up Christian Pulisic and Thomas Tuchel's name got mentioned, everybody saw Tuchel and Antonio Conte after the draw between Chelsea and Spurs. A friend of the show made this picture, which is, Tuchel there and Conte. This is after the handshake situation. They're not making eye contact everywhere. If you can spot friend of the program, whoever the friend of the program is in this picture, go ahead and lock in your guesses now. Let's zoom in because I see him right there. I see the guy. Who is that? That is...
Is that JTT?
OMFBG13, it's JTT!
That is Jonathan Taylor Tannenwald, as we call him on this show, friend of the program, friend of mine for a very long time. Apparently, it was not common knowledge that he was in London and that he was at Stamford, or was this game at Stamford Bridge or the new joint for Spurs? I don't know, wherever
it
was.
I can't remember.
Yeah, Stamford whatever Bridge. It was. Stamford Bridge. Okay, it wasn't common knowledge he was there. He got outed. Shout out to Pablo Maurer, who was putting it all over Twitter. But shout out to JTT. I wanted to mention that since he is a friend of the show and calls in on a regular basis. Also, in terms of images on the internet, we would be remiss if we did not address the latest leak of the potential U.S. men's national team looks for the World Cup. Home white, blue away, if you want to look at it that way. It's the white and the change. People are not happy, Sam. People are upset. I saw your tweet. You weren't a fan of this, right? These are not good.
Yeah, it doesn't spark a lot of joy, man. It's hard to imagine me buying this particular one, and I'm a guy that buys a lot of jerseys. Not a lot there to get excited about. I'm really hoping that if these are official, that they're like the warm-up kits or something like that, and we have something else. But I don't like the center crest at all.
I'm not a fan of that either. And our own Morgan Tenso says that that's been common knowledge for a while, that they've announced they're going center crest. I don't know. Remember the Pumas? They're still out there, right? The Pumas that say like the city's name across the chest that are just absolutely atrocious. These are worse than those, I think. Or in the same ballpark. It's so little effort. There's basically nothing here. I've watched people on TikTok make better shirts than the blue one with the tie-dye look that is. I don't know what that is.
What I don't understand is like the fans are pretty unanimous in like what they want. You know, like the fans have been saying, give us something akin to the Waldos for years now. And if you do that, I mean, I'm sure they would sell a ton of jerseys. I don't know why you don't go back there. Why?
I have one in my closet. It is a authentic and it's a medium. So I'm not quite comfortable wearing it on the show right now. Catch me in a couple weeks when I've hit the diet. I almost wore it in protest just to kind of show it off. Like, this is what we should be wearing. It's so easy. And there are a bunch of fan designs that are hitting Twitter that I see. Olive in York is posting a bunch of them. If you follow them, as they do like a state design thing, and people were submitting designs for each state, and then national team, and everybody wants red and white stripes, and red has now disappeared again. Like, why? And if for anybody who's wondering, are these real? I don't like jumping ahead if it's just an unconfirmed leak. But Weston McKennie's in Instagram comments saying, "I told them. I tried to tell them."
Like, What's the point of leaking if you can't pull the plug? You know, like, isn't that the whole thing? You kind of put it out there and see what people say. And if I mean, it has been. I haven't seen one person say a single positive thing about these jerseys. Now, usually, whenever they drop jerseys and there's a jersey leak, a lot of people will hate on the jerseys. But then it'll kind of be split. It'll be like 60-40 or 50-50. Yeah. This has been 100% negativity 100%. On these things, and I can't believe that the folks at Nike would pull through with it after the response that they've got, unless, of course, they just don't care.
Well, maybe the numbers are just going to be so unique and different and creative, Sam, that it saves both of these. Is that possible?
No.
Is that possible?
No.
We've had some, look, again, Waldo is the one I think a lot of people gravitate to. And by the way, the Waldo's not 100%. Lots of people hate the Waldo. Like, it's not an obviously aesthetically pleasing shirt. It just fits what I think of when I think of a soccer shirt. But we've had some pretty bad ones. I have one in my closet that looks kind of like the white one. It's that white thing with like little blue pinstripes on the sleeves, but it looks like a polo. Like, it doesn't have a collar, but it kind of looks like a polo. It looks like something you would wear to church. It's not. Why are we not even getting like, and this is, again, consistent refrain from fans. Pick a look, make that our look, preferably with some red. And the geometric pattern thing, why do we burn that? What happened? I liked that one. I know that was busy.
Over my shoulder. There's the one from the Gold Cup. I think that was whenever we didn't make the World Cup, so nobody really talks about that one anymore. But I think it's a good look, actually. Yeah. I really like that jersey. And then this one that I always associate with Landon Donovan. I don't remember what year that was, but I really like it. And it's always the horizontal stripes that work, and you can kind of play off the design a lot of different ways, but then sometimes they just go off, like the gradient one, the blue gradient, is just not my favorite look. I always associate that one with Michael Bradley.
It's crazy. You have three I do not have, and I have like five or six, I think, I have the Bomb Pop. How do you feel about Bomb Pop?
I like the Bomb Pop, and once again, that's a horizontal stripe design. I think it works really well just because of the way that our flag is with the horizontal stripes. I think you just use that design template and you can do all kinds of stuff with it. But that's not what we choose to do. We choose to go tie-dye and choose colors that aren't in the flag and just like,
Look, and it's important to point out, and I kind of did this on the show, like on my radio show. I don't think they're good, but I'm also not like going to go crazy until I kind of see them, and then I guess we can also. But by then, I'm caring about how they play, not what their shirts look like. Do you know what I'm saying? Unless they are just so, these things are not to the point of like, oh, they're going to be famously ugly for the remainder of history. You know, like we already talked about the Brits never giving us any credit at all. It's not like they're going to be able to say, "Oh, your shirts are the ugliest in the history of the game." They're just nothing. They're just kind of there, right? Now, that's what we want. We want it to stand out a little bit. But I'm not sure that when we step on the field on November 21st against Wales, that my first thought is going to be, "Oh, we don't look good."
I mean, we might not be able to tell us apart from England if we're wearing those white jerseys with just like the little red and the blue right there. The funny thing about whenever you said that about historically ugly, I thought about the denim jerseys, which have sort of come back in vogue.
Oh,
now.
Yeah.
They've come all the way back where people are into them now. But like this issue for me like cuts deep. I'm going to bring it up just because Felix kind of brought it up, but I actually started a U.S. soccer apparel company because I'm just so frustrated with the designs that are available from U.S. soccer that just seem to be designed by people that have never watched a U.S. soccer game and certainly have never been on U.S. soccer Twitter and just have like they're just so generic and so boring and so expensive that I felt like I had to do something to put designs out there that actually kind of speak to where the fans are. And
that's dope. I love it.
Frustrates me about these jerseys is it just is so far away from where the fans are. I don't know how they design these things. I don't know if it's a person that cares about U.S. soccer at all or if it's just like guy who got assigned to do this at Nike.
You know, I've heard some anecdotal stories about, you know, people going to Nike stores and basically there being no soccer stuff anymore. And I mean, it depends on where you go, I'm sure. But it does feel as though there's been a regression. And maybe missing the Men's World Cup in 2018 is the issue here. But the women's team is still the best in the world last time I checked. Why aren't we pushing, you know, and they had to go start their own, you know, gear company to kind of because nobody at U.S. Soccer was stepping up. So, what's going on?
Yeah, it's frustrating. It's something that bothers me a lot and I think about a lot. Who's actually designing these jerseys? If it is someone who really cares about the national team and wants us to look great and is trying to put it fashion forward, then okay. But I don't think it is. I think it's somebody who wants to be designing basketball jerseys or something like that.
Again, you're the one that with the apparel company now. I'm just a guy who buys stuff like this. I'm going to buy your stuff, but I buy stuff like this, which is just, you know, an image, a picture on a shirt from the guys at Tifosi Football. Sashes, you can never go wrong. There are some really good U.S. shirts that had the sash involved, right? As you said, horizontal stripes. We have horizontal stripes on our flag. It's right there. Just grab that design element and use it. Squeeze it for everything it's worth. Why not? And then, of course, the red thing. Like, red is the primary color. I know it's also a color of Russia and Canada and communism, but come on, it's our color here too. Look at all the red. Well, we should be wearing more red. We did for a while, and then poof, it's gone.
Not a lot of, I didn't know this until I got really close to one, but I didn't realize for years that the Waldos actually have the sash. Like, it's faint, but it's in there.
It's in there, yeah.
Which is a really cool. It just adds to how good of a design that was, because it was brand new, it was unique, but it was also something that is reminiscent of some things that worked in the past, and it just brought a lot of things together, and it's frustrating that if this is what we're going to get, then that's frustrating.
Yeah. Shout out here to Kai718. Nike never uses the guy who does all the MLS badges and does the Nigeria shirts everyone loves. That's Matthew Wolf, by the way, who kills it, and he's done a bunch of lower division soccer badges as well. He's involved in Vermont Green. I think he did LAFC. He did Tulsa. He did that Green Bay Voyagers badge, which is a fantastic one. I think that they're an amateur team or a high. Some Nicholas Murray knows all this stuff, and he'll tell you guys in the chat.
Did he do Madison?
Matthew Wolf. Madison, did he do Madison? Somebody tell me if Matt Wolf did Madison. I can't remember. I don't think so. Yeah, Morgan says no.
There's some really good-looking designs in American soccer, in MLS, and especially in USL. USL has some really good-looking stuff, man.
They do. Yeah. We got to get on that track. For me, I think the consistent look and, like, picking something that feels American without going crazy over the top, you know? I saw somebody today, and I'm not going to out them because I think he deleted the tweet. I'm not sure why. But somebody said, the most frustrating thing about this is that if you made this stuff really look American, and like, I may not like garish, but you can do that with the stripes and the stars and everything else. And the denim kit is a good example of this. You can sell to people who aren't soccer fans who just want to be very American and very patriotic. It's sitting right there, just in terms of the money. You know, I don't know how comfortable everybody is with non-soccer fans who are super patriotic rushing in and buying stuff. But if that helps
the
national team? I'm super
comfortable with it. I interviewed Greg Lawless on my channel a few months ago, who is now the marketing director of USL. And he spoke about that very thing, about how if you can come up with a brand for your team that captures the city so well that people that aren't even soccer fans are going to want to go out there and buy it just to rep the city, then you're onto something. And that's a way to bring new people in, to build new fans. I think about a team like Austin FC, who, if you go to Austin, I mean, that Austin FC is everywhere. And it's not just people who are soccer fans wearing it. It's just people who want to rep the city. And they did a great job of doing that. And I think that speaks to why that team has been so successful in building a fan base that's one of the better ones in MLS already.
Look, that's a trick that LAFC pulled off. Before they had a team, before they had a player, before they had anything except the badge. And Matt Wolf did that badge. And they did that badge, and it spread like wildfire across Los Angeles to people who said, what is this? I don't know. It looks great. I'm putting this on, because they wanted to rep Los Angeles.
I'm going to say it. I've said it before on Twitter, and I've gotten killed for it. But I'm going to say it again, okay? Because I think it's just so true, and I will die on this hill. If New England Revolution changed their name to Boston FC, it would become one of the bigger brands in MLS overnight. Nobody.
I don't think that's wrong.
Nobody who doesn't
Boston,
like soccer is going to rep a New England Revolution jersey. Nobody is from New England. Everybody is from a town. New England means nothing. I get the Patriots are a big deal, but they're the Patriots of the NFL. NFL's different. Yeah. You win a bunch of Super Bowls, you're treated differently. If they change their name to Boston FC and actually had a stadium that was in Boston or somewhere close to Boston, I think that they would go for one of the
Anyway, I don't hate their badge. I don't hate their new badge, but you're absolutely right. And being in Boston and repping Boston, that is, yeah, 100%. I agree with you on that. All right, so enough jersey complaints. I think we've run through all of our topics tonight. I mean, again, we could have spent a little bit more time on some of the Americans playing abroad. I didn't, you know, get Sam's thoughts on the MLS playoff race. If you want to talk LA Galaxy with me, Sam, but I do appreciate you coming by, sitting in for Jared Dubois. You know, plug your stuff. I don't think you need it. I think you're doing great, but plug your stuff so people who don't know about you can find you.
Yeah, so I'm the Yank Report on YouTube. I do a bunch of videos about the U.S. men's national team. I try to do videos that I try to pretty regularly do videos, I'll say. They go a bit deeper and to really chew on a subject and to really think about it in a way that's kind of not being thought about and kind of put out some takes that aren't really being had out there in the discourse. I also do interviews and, you know, I started a Road to Qatar series, which focuses on, it's not just a straight up Yanks Abroad series. It's more about what happened last week that's going to have an impact on the national team discussion immediately. I'm talking about players that are in the national team discussion or could potentially be in the national team discussion and kind of focusing it on that. I also have the Since 76 Apparel Company. We do T-shirt designs that are made specifically for U.S. soccer fans in order to bring U.S. soccer into places that it isn't right now, because the current U.S. soccer apparel on the market is not stuff that you would wear to a lot of different places. It's not the most attractive stuff. So hopefully if someone wears this Vamos Estados Unidos shirt or something like that out to a party or something like that, and somebody says, hey, I like that shirt, what is that? Then you could say it's about the national team. The national team's really good. The World Cup's coming up. It's bringing soccer. It's using culture to bring soccer to places that it's not usually at, and in order to tell the story of the national team and to bring more people to the table. We do releases once a month, at least right now. I think we're going to do a little bit more as the World Cup comes up. This release, the Vamos Estados Unidos release, is going to come up this Saturday, the 21st. It's going to run for a week. You're only going to be able to get this design for that week, so you have to go to the website during that week. If you want to be notified, you can sign up for the mailing list. Yeah, it's mail. Okay. It's limited edition. It's limited drops. We are going to do some hats pretty soon. I got the hat design back, which I'm really excited about. So that's something fun. But yeah, we have a bunch of designs that we're going to be running through the World Cup and even beyond the World Cup. So I'm really excited about that. You can find me on Twitter at @ReportYank. And I think that's it.
Look, that's a lot. You're killing it. And we didn't specifically get to this, even though I told Sam we would talk about it, but I'm going to encourage everybody, look, watch all his videos. Absolutely. But I'm going to pick out a video he did a couple weeks ago on the tactical evolution of Greg Berhalter. If you just want to kind of get a thumbnail sketch in about 20 minutes, right, Sam, of sort of how Berhalter has shifted the way the team has played, especially over World Cup qualifying, it's a very good watch, very informative. Sam gives you all you need to know about that. I mean, not all of us are tactical experts, right, and kind of understand the ins and outs of that, and Sam does a good job breaking that all down. I want to thank Sam Stokes again for sitting in for Jared Dubois. Jared, get better. Apparently, he did tell everybody he has COVID. Jared got COVID. Finally! I mean, he's maybe the last person on the planet to get it who didn't have it already. So good for him to last this long. We definitely wish him well and hope he gets better. I'm going to remind you that The Best Soccer Show has a Patreon page, patreon.com/TheBestSoccerShow. I'm trying to up our output. I'm doing some behind-the-scenes stuff over there. Dropped a couple of audio pieces in the last couple of days. We have the Slack, which is fantastic. Great community of soccer fans. People just sharing information and commiserating and all kinds of stuff over there. Jokes flying all over the place. So if you join the Patreon, you get access to all of that. Patreon.com/TheBestSoccerShow. Morgan will tell you to definitely follow us on Twitter @BestieSoccer, Instagram @TheBestSoccerShow. And I think that's it. And again, hopefully Jared Dubois is back next time. Thank you to Sam Stokes. Thank you for listening. We will see you guys next time.
Where are you? Where is A-A-Ron right now? It was there.
Oh, here we go. Saucing him up. Hit him. What?
Take us to DEFCON 3.
What are we doing?
Is that JTT?
OMFBG 13, it's JTT!
This sausage king of Chicago.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Michael freaking Orozco Fisco!
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
Jay Rodeo.